Rivers run into the midnight sun. Blades go round and round, you're on my mind. Restless skeet eats alone tonight, sending all my casts along the weeds. They say that a lake ain't no place to start a memory. Right down the line, it's been you and me. Loving a musky man ain't always what it's supposed to be. Oh, ski, swim by me.
Alright folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, a Jay Bird.
Steve, what is going on?
Living the dream as always. Anyway,
excellent.
What's going on up there, man?
Yeah, well, we just had opening weekend, a Musky and general opener, so.
General open.
Decent weather, pretty windy, but not too bad, so. Mostly people walleye fishing.
Yeah.
You know, that has not changed. So
a lot of
this
scoops.
Might be the only early musky season that we get here. The way things are looking for next year, that they might reverse that, but we'll see.
Well, on that front, you know, last week we talked about the Indian regs, and I think I told people, you know, some of the regulations have teeth, I hear. Even there's even some extent that might change as well. Did you hear that as well?
That has changed. Yeah. The state intervened. The state intervened. I guess it went federal, and a federal court deemed it not possible to continue in that form. So I don't have much details on that, but they reversed it. So, the 19 lakes on Lac du Flambeau Reservation, which is just west of Minocqua and north.
Nice.
You can fish for muskie and walleye now. So that thing only lasted less than a month, and it definitely got a lot of attention around here. So right now, that's the way it sits.
Well,
and forget we even mentioned it a month ago.
Well, it was real. It was real then, and until they have its trial, it's just too much. Stop the insanity. There's always something happening in Wisconsin.
There's quite a bit.
Not gonna freaking make it easy. At least the horror shows and of the amount of people that came into the shop here, they've bought their vacation home or their second home and they think they can't fish, but at least we're taking some counter-correction measures there. I'm sure it'll sort out
there.
Yeah,
they acted quickly, too. They reversed it just before season started, last week. So
property values and property taxes will stop people dead in their tracks.
Well, yeah, that's not cool. That's not cool to mess with people like that, is it?
Not much. Well, it depends. It just depends on
What did I say? Three people came in a one-week period a few weeks back.
Yeah.
When it was still imposed, and they were asking if it was real. So, and we talked about it, and it's like, well, I own a home on this lake, and I home own, you know, they were very happy about it.
Well, would you be? I mean, I didn't delve into it before we shot off here. Did they, in any way, shape, or form, there's no shutdowns at all? Is that completely off the table for right now until they sort it out in court?
Apparently, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Gotcha. I heard that on the news, Googled it, blah, blah, blah. It seems to be right now that's the way it is. So,
That could change
tomorrow.
You're not
out of bounds fishing over there. So, certainly could. I haven't heard of any other reversals or, attempts to reverse the reversal. So, we're good for now.
We're good for it. Folks, just it's Wisconsin. you never know. That's good though. That's sorted out. So, other good news. a little birdie hit Jay up right before we started here. Sounds like there's going to be some Lake X treasure showing up tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, we should have them on the website Tuesday. They just got dropped off as I was leaving work, so we got some fat bastards from Lake X, which is their number one top water, and that new hammer top water.
Nice.
And they've got some, Tom called me and he's like, the guy that dropped him off, an associate of John's, was describing the paintwork. They've got a new paint process and a new paint quality. So
nice.
That's improved. It's better. I haven't seen them yet again. So we'll shoot those and get them on the website. Yeah. That's very cool. Great timing.
Good timing. And it's one of those deals of John's making those baits himself. If that's one you've been waiting on, because the sign up list on those is deep, my dudes. There's a lot of people waiting where it's like they got to get their hands on it. So if that's something you want for this season, pop off and pop up fast when they go up. Probably there's no, Jay's got to get there. You got to get the photos taken and then you got to list them. So,
It should be up Tuesday, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow, Tuesday. Well, do you know, hopefully, just be watching if you're a Lake X guy and you've been waiting to get your hands on one of those, because far and few between on the production end of things. I guess we're jumping into the comings and the goings right here. So, literal single digits left on Musky IQ Analyze and Execute. Thank you very much, folks. If you got your hands on that, those will be gone probably by the end of today, heck, tomorrow, sometime. But don't freak out. There's more getting printed there. They are on the way. Other than that, I think we're, other than the Lake X will show up, anything else? Same stuff. We're kind of getting to that point where things are going to matriculate in throughout musky fishing as we go on. Anything on the horizon, Jay? Is there anything like grumblings of...
Yeah, there's some new stuff. To be honest, I don't even know the title. You know, know who they're from. One was a Canadian manufacturer. Another one was, I don't know. We tested some stuff today. Actually got on the lake this morning and, 30-plus mile-an-hour winds with Tom, and we shot some lure demos for the first time in a long time. And, so that went pretty well. Got probably 8 out of it, including some of the new Livingston stuff that you designed.
Nice.
And some other newish baits. So, we'll be working on those and get them out soon.
You were out. Speaking of, Jay was out. I think you actually got out on the water and went fishing this past weekend, believe it or not.
I actually went fishing for, a couple hours Sunday. Yeah,
nice.
It was 65 degrees and got one little one on my trusty Titan Junior. And
nice.
Went home and, it's a good day.
Get out on the boat. Well, it's freaking, can't believe it's here. So, speaking of, and let's just crush spirits real quick, shall we? Let's just take the excitement down to a -2 real fast. Everybody waits around, right? It's time to get on the water. We're finally fishing again. We're musky fishing again for the folks up north, right? It's spring. The dreaded spring cold front, Jay.
Right.
It happens.
Expect many.
My little birdie named Danny Herbeck, speaking of just that, he said he's still got ice up there, which is a whole other fun ball of wax. But
Eagle Lake is ice covered?
I don't know if it's Eagle. You're just talking for like 5 seconds. He's still got ice. I'm sure Eagle's probably ice, but nonetheless, it's still nice and cold up there. But cold fronts. Mm-hmm. Now, can you catch them in a cold front? Abso-freaking-lutely. That was the story of my end of my week. And here's the trajectory, and this is what I wanted to lay at everybody's feet here. With cyclical weather, beginning of this deal, Jay, rainy, overcast, beautiful, wackety-schmackety, popping them left and right? Things are wonderful. When you have really good conditions, they're generally followed up with really poor conditions, right? That's what we're getting into. Get your brain back into that cycle, because even southern anglers or guys that are in that midsection, right, your Illinois, your Indiana, all that stuff, as spring kind of comes together, we get more into the cyclical nature of things of three good days, three bad days, right? Where weather always has the patterns, but you get into this and you'll notice it every year. You come out, it's gangbusters a little bit, and then we get into where there's it's a couple good days, a couple bad days, a couple good days, a couple bad days. But the bad days are not necessarily bad days, right?
Yeah,
and it's something that Jay, you've done it with me on the water, and we've done it together. Where here comes the dreaded cold front, everybody's kicking rocks and they're hitting the net, and getting out of that spring mindset, because I'm trying to help everybody get ahead of the game here. For the Wisconsin guys that are about to hit it and people that are already fishing a bit here, once you get through that post-spawn, that little period is when these are, especially with the cold, or I shouldn't even say the post-spawn, just during that period, the cold fronts often crush everybody, right? Because you have two different speeds going at once, if you will. When you get these early season cold fronts, the fish revert pretty dang quickly back to bottom, right? That, oh, I'm up spawning, I'm doing this number, okay. Everybody thinks they're going to stick up there to the grass, they're going to stick up to the, you know, the edge, they're going to just, the cold fronts, when they happen, they smack those shallow temperatures down so fast that fish drop back. And I mean, this past weekend for me, it's just like, once that set in, I mean, it's one of those deals, Jay. Here it is. You had the better temperatures than I did this weekend where you were at. You know, it's cold, you're getting off the lake. It's one of those, you got a wind burnt face kind of weekends, right?
Right.
Earlier in the week, it was glorious, right? You hit that, and you've got to realize the impacts of these fronts. A, before you leave the house, and I'm just trying to get the spring game plan or the thought process with these cold fronts in the early season is you can save yourself a tremendous amount of time and effort by admitting you're in a cold front before you even launch the boat, right? And I actually ran into a bunch of different boats this weekend of a couple people I knew, all this, that. Now they're hearing from other people, people calling me, people texting, you know, in not just here, but a lot of different places. They were out and about because you hit that May time, and that's when everybody wants to get on the water, right? They're like, oh, it's time. And it will do you a hell of a lot more good than spending half the day to figure out they're not cracking than to, A, firstly, admit where you're at in the weather cycle and go, oh, this is a cold front. That'll help you.
Let's recognize it and adjust and admit it in your mind before you even hit the water.
Right. Instead of going, well, I'm going to go up and do this or do that, or, you know, hey, last week they were, or this were, no, just go assess the freaking situation, make an assessment off the rip there and go, the reality is we're in a cold front because Thursday it or Friday, you know, the weather was X, Y, and Z. Now, to get it back in everybody's head, because a lot of guys are going to be back on the water for the first time in a long time, I've always talked about patterning whether you're there or not, right? Get that back in your head. So how can we make an assessment? Well, we can look at our phone. And this is the glory of it. You got it all there on your phone. You can look at the musky weather on the app. You can look at your whatever app you're using and go, well, what's the weather been before I got there, right? Should you be on the upturn or the downturn of musky activity? We got to consider that before we even head out of the house. That is going to save you a tremendous amount of time to go, what is taking place before you even freaking put the cooler together to leave? Is it a cold front? Are we prefrontal? Are we postfrontal? Are we in the, where are we at in the weather cycle? Right?
Yeah, the weather history is huge. Just to have a general idea about the previous week would be helpful.
Right, and it's right there in your phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to do. We have all the world's knowledge is in your pocket. This is not hard.
Yep. One word screenshot.
Right. Frickin' or Google. What was the weather? Hell, mm-hmm. Google. Are we in a cold front? It'll tell you now. It doesn't get. Do it.
I bet it will.
I probably will.
That's one I haven't tried, Steve.
Well, you probably. Hell, let me do it. Watch this. Let me see. I feel like Bill O'Reilly shooting it live. let me try the old demon box here and see.
So you got your location on, and you're going to Google AI, are we in a cold front right now?
Yeah, let's see. Are we in a cold front? Me dumb.
Don't add that last part.
Oh, going to get another cold front late Wednesday. Yep, current conditions warming. Humidity's up today because we're coming off a cold front. A cold front. Freaking do this. I just Googled, right? The old Google box. Based on my location, you're currently experiencing warm seasonal spring weather with highs reverting back to the 80s. But a cold front is expected to arrive late Wednesday, right? Or Wednesday night, bringing cooler temperatures and potential showers or thunderstorms. This aligns with a broader pattern of chilly air affecting the eastern U.S. Okay. So, now, folks, there's no excuse. You can just ask the demon box in your pocket what's going
Very
on.
Very nice.
Did
your location come up so you could verify that it was?
I saw it, yeah. But.
Huh. Interesting.
So let's understand the weather pattern. Now you have no excuse, right? That's now it's even worse. So looking at the weather history or where you're going to be or what you're going to do, that just got 10 times easier to understand where you're at. Is it a cold front? Is it not a cold front? Because I bring that up and I didn't even know you could Google it or use AI for that per se. But Jay, no less than three people hit the old text line here on me, right? Wanting to understand what was happening with the weather.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Figure that out. Then, once we understand that, we can assess what we should be doing. Now, from that standpoint, this is a spring cold front, right? We're fighting for warmth in the shallows. What are muskies going to do? They will quickly revert. Right. So you're going to have that change where they are going to move off of shallow cover, shallow structure. Right. And revert to first breaks and deeper.
Cold fronts in the spring, more impact.
More impact.
Say summer. Yeah.
And it's just that age old. You've heard it for freaking years up there. Oh, it was good, and then it's the season.
Oh, yeah.
It's the season opener kiss of death or early season. Whether you've been fishing or not, this post-spawn period, and it's funny because a cold front pre-spawn does not hit as hard. Went through that, here in recent history. So the pre-spawn cold front doesn't impact activity as hard as the post-spawn cold front during this time period, right? Where they're more apt to pop off before, then the reluctance is increased. And I wouldn't even say, I don't want to say reluctance, if maybe even lockjaw or propensity to go even smaller, right? When we get into that busky fishing or we get into, okay, they were going, and now you really have to make a hard shift. But The thing that happens is now we have to identify where we're at. We've got to make decisions. We've got to make transitions. And now we still have a narrow bite window. Well, what happens if we haven't made those, if we have not admitted what we're in on a weather cycle, we've not prepared to have ideas already prepared on how to deal with it, right? and the bite window's at 2 o'clock, or there's a major or a minor or something's happening. You see what I'm saying? Like, by the time you figured out where you're at, you know, boom, you've missed the window. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying to look at the weather, understand where you're at, and then kind of conceptualize what you're going to be dealing with before you even get there. And time and time and time again, it's just like, have been able to smack them in cold fronts. Like I mentioned, because you and I have done so much stuff of that ilk where it's just like, no one is catching. No, you know, 10 boats, 20 boats, whatever. Yeah. And it's that stick and stay, make them pay mentality. And it's also, too, just the admitting where we're at in a weather front or a weather cycle. Enough.
I mean, this early in the season, I mean, you know, water temps are generally in the 40s. I mean, they're spiking and coming down, you know what I mean? We're having some couple days in the 60s, but then, you know, I mean, a couple nights ago, it was in the low 20s. So it's obviously bringing stuff down quickly. But that whole thing, understanding that, it's going to at least dial you into location a lot better. Yeah. You can go from there with presentation, you know.
Well, you know, it's just that, heck, it's like half the stuff I'm talking about in the new book, which is just mindset. And there's so many logic-based things that you can just, if you take 5 seconds and think about it, it solves a lot of problems, right? I'm sitting here looking at the walls of the bait cave and there's 8 million baits, right? Where do you start? Everybody's got the same problem. There's a million places you think the muskies could be. You got a million baits you could possibly use. And then we have the variable. How do we narrow the scope? And logic is going to get you there faster than anything. So, you know, breaking down even further though, let's say you hit the dreaded cold front. It's going to happen to everybody, right? How do we continue to engage with fish? Let's say that you get your weekender, Jay. You got Friday and you got Saturday, right? Or you got Saturday and you got Sunday. Those are your 2 days to fish or whatever it looks like.
Yeah.
And, you know, or maybe you only got one. It doesn't matter. But let's say you go out Friday after work and you move some fish or you score one, right? And then we have, you know, the system goes through and we have the cold front and hits on Saturday. What are we going to do? Right? How do we make an adjustment in the early season to stay engaged with muskies? And how do we plan for that? Or how do we conceptualize what we're going to do? First and foremost, you've got to consider if we're now in a spring cold front, there was a frontal movement that came through that probably knocked down the caloric needs of multiple fish that day, right? So they were going before, right? So whether you were there or not, that's something I think a lot of people struggle with. They don't know if the muskies were going, if there was really, you know, oh, they're just not doing this or they, you know, you've got to admit that there was a feed up before you got there because the weather cycle went that way or because of conditions, right? So you had the rain, you had this, you had that come through. There was a heightened feeding window is more advantageous for muskies. They're up and moving. So if you're hitting this cold front, just admit first off the bat that you're narrowing the number of actively feeding fish. Right? Now, the positive of that is generally the actively feeding fish are still trophy class fish, right? You're usually in a cold front, done it a million times, proved it freaking time and time and time and time and time again, of upper 40s, low 50s, or just bulbous fish. You know what I'm saying? Catching some real serious fish in tough conditions. So the uptick of it is the reason you don't just hang it up from day one or not even go is you can get in front of some of the biggest fish there are, right? They'll still be actively feeding. But to that extent, we've gone, okay, we need to narrow our expectations. That's what I'm trying to get at here is don't go out and go, you're going to be able to run and gun in those conditions in the spring. It truncates everything. So now we're going to narrow our bait selection because we go, we'll probably need to downsize. Because it's a spring, we need to downsize from downsize. What? We need to downsize from downsize. So we went from a slammer fatty minnow to what? What do we even have left? Not much. You might have a 22 short. You might have a KVD bass bait. You know, you might go from your single, you know, your small spinner bait to your smallest spinner bait. But thinking ahead in these terms, thinking in the head of these terms ahead of time is what I'm trying to get in your head to have kind of maybe you call it your cold front emergency preparation kit. I know I have mine. Jay, do you have yours?
I do. I do sometimes. I've fished with guys in the past when I've done that, and they've gone, what? Are you gas fishing now?
Yeah, no.
We're still musky fishing, boys.
Frickin', I've got my frickin' smoker time. I got like the 4-inch smoker shad. Not even that. I think it's smaller than that. But, you know,
And jigging, too. You know, in this cold front situation, you know, your channels are off deep edges, you know, when they do go low. It's like, don't be afraid to go that route with some kind of, you know, you probably have to, you know, manufacture something yourself, you know, in terms of using a leader, you know, the whole walleye fishing thing. You know how many pictures I saw of the fit? I'm just thinking about social over the weekend up here. And it's like, it seems like most of the muskies caught when people posted were catching them. I know Jake got one, right? Yeah. And you say Jake Smith got one. He was walleye guiding. Yep. And I mean, you'll land them sometimes. They won't snap off, but, you know, these guys are using 6-pound test. Well, we're on the same type presentation with a 4-inch twister tail or something, half ounce jig head, and, you know, get some 20-pound 7-strand leader and make up some small leaders with that.
Well, I mean,
what happens?
I you know, and as far as my cold front emergency preparation kit, you know, it's a very fancy setup. No, I mean, the tiny gets it tubes, right? That's my bottom bouncing jig. Those little gets it tubes from the musky shop. I've got Cincos, right? Big Cincos, tiny tubes, literal bass size jerk baits, which is like the, you've got from Livingston, you have the Jerk Master, and then you've got like the Vision from Mega Bass, right? And then just bread and butter for me are the small figure eight spinner baits, the little ones. But
The little hot one.
And in these conditions, though, we revert, and the thing to think about in these spring cold fronts is, if these fish were already lethargic, guess what they are now, Jay? Extra lethargic. So, slowing down, right? And these, and I'm beating on this because this is where everybody struggles, which is that this time period of slowing it down, slow down.
Well, like you said just a minute ago, slowing down from slowing down, because that's all I did yesterday. You know, with stop and go at a very slow pace over some flats with my old trusty Titan Junior. You know, it's just like, I'm not gonna keep the tempo slow until the water gets well into the 50s at least. Yeah.
Well, and even the thing you say that though, and it's like the temperature differential for me here is even just post spawn is post spawn that. Cold front at depth, you know, because you're saying that even into the mid 50s, I mean, if you look when they're dropping back, it's still cold. Like if you're measuring at depth, and a little bit of time a year too, because it hits just as hard here, even now, you know what I'm saying? Like you might have like, timing, a little bit of like recovery time where I think what I'm trying to get is that it extends further out than just the numbers on the fish finder as far as your temp a lot of times, right? It's what Jay's saying, you're right. There's a solid rule of thumb there of how far to slow down, but also a little bit of time a year too, right? Where even for me, it's like how slow can you go, right? Even into this where I'm solidly into the 60s, and then when you have that temperature drop, you know, you have that cold front, it still hits pretty hard. You know what I'm saying? That until we get later in the year, it still hits pretty hard. But
No one has a summer pattern established yet. So,
right.
I agree with you. I mean, this is a good topic. I didn't know what we were going to be talking about, but
we never do.
No.
That might be, you true. Might have just said it, which is until a summer pattern is established, that might be the ticket. Which is, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I'm just, you're saying that, I'm thinking, okay, when does it happen? Because, you know, in the mm-hmm. South or yep. in the mid-South and the, you know, even that Indiana mid-range, all that fun stuff, you know, the seasonality is not as truncated as it is for the farther north you go, but the effects, you know, the effects are still pretty hitting on these fish.
Well, it's always not, you know, everyone's like, you know, they talk about temperatures, they talk about water temps, and it's just like, we're talking about this cold front. Literally, as we speak, a cold front is going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, and it's going to be, if anyone's fishing tomorrow for muskies, you know, it went from 60s today to, you know, it's supposed to be a high of like 44 tomorrow or something like that.
Ugh,
probably off, a hard man. North. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, and also, too, I mean, you know, the photo period, your time of day and all this stuff, I think dictates quite a bit of it. We don't, you know, nobody really knows the answer of why at different times they hit them as hard. But, you know, whether we even take it to Canada, once they hit their post spawn period and once you get those cold fronts, it just, you know, the effects are detrimental to most anglers. But I mean, to stay dialed in on it is just so, I think, hard for most people because it's a double reversion, right? Not only are we downsizing for downsize, right? You have no faith in what baits could, you probably don't even know what baits could potentially work because they're not musky baits, right? So we take that and now we're getting out of everybody's wheelhouse on speed. And if you run into a scenario where you're struggling heavily this spring or this early season, use it as an opportunity to gain confidence with these things, right? I mean, just like we talk about all the different mm-hmm. bait classes where, look, I've never caught one on glider. We've been through this, you know. Use numbers lakes or use really good days to get confident on a lot of different baits. Tactically, of admitting that muskies will hit things that are that slow, that's a big benefit, and admitting that muskies will hit non-musky baits. You know, because there's plenty of guys that have not accidentally caught a muskie on a walleye setup or something like that. And,
yeah, right, I suppose,
you know,
sure.
Yeah, and then you can still fish it. Like I said, I don't recommend fishing, you know, other gear. I mean, especially you don't want to latch into a monster on like 10-pound braid. That's bad. But there's a lot of options there where you can kind of, like you said early on, make it yourself or put together a rig, but have something in the boat where you're not going to be left completely on the outside looking in of having a setup or having some gear allocated for some of those necessity bites. You know, the Gitset tubes, little those. I mean, what do you got there? Do we have the Ike's Monster Jig still, Jay?
Yeah.
Which is like,
we do. Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Things of that nature where it's like swim jig stuff. And downsized cranks is just going to be...
Yeah, put a trailer on that, use a leader. Yeah, it's just oversized bass jigs. Yeah, I mean, you get something, you know, in 1 ounce, 3/4 ounce, you know, get a slow sink to that thing.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like, it is what it is. Or get a critter. That's other reason that exists. But, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't want to sit there and beat... Yeah. I don't want to beat my own chest on it, but that's part of...
Well, it's a pattern people should think about for some time because just...
It's gonna... Like, it's not if.
The summer pattern, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's in a different range, you know, from Tennessee to northern Minnesota, you know, there's a large musky range and climactically a lot of differences to contend with. So I guess what I was talking about earlier is it's just like people talk about, well, the water hits 72, you know, and they're convinced, you know, things have changed and things have settled, but it's just mm-hmm. like spikes don't mean anything really other than the fact that, you know, it might ignite, you know, different, you know, minnows and stuff like that. Bait fish location and right. stuff like that. In my mind, it's just like until you start getting like peak summer weed growth and stabilized water temps, you know, this is spring period and yeah, you got to make serious adjustments when the cold fronts come by.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say that in this period that a lot of guys are missing, again, I try to not beat my chest too much on Critter for the spring cold fronts, right? But I will beat my chest on Titan. Like, you, it's just, forget it.
You said you got some on both sides this week. Yeah. Or this last week. Yeah.
A good pal of mine, actually, he didn't get it in the boat, but he hit me up and he'd had a real nice one on the Big Titan. I had Big Titan action myself and Little Titan action, cool. Which is a lot of, and it's funny. I did early in the week, I was on the fly too. Which, you know, people don't realize how many muskies you can move on flies. And then you look at muskies and they'll just come up and hammer a fly. And you go, well, that doesn't have much to it. It's got the right profile and it's got a slow advance and it doesn't quite have the crazy displacement where the subtleness of Dive and Rise. And I think it's one of those things where that early season bite, that post-spawn bite, that's what Titan Jr. was made for when they're moderately active, right? And just kind of put it back in your wheelhouse of that's, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go pure cold front, right? That's not my like knee jerk reaction with the Titan Jr. in a bad cold front, because I'm still wanting those fish to be in somewhat shallow or some active. But if it's on the cusp or it's in between or it's just starting to look decent, that thing will just pull them up when nothing else will. Right, because it's essentially like pull, pause. It's like I always thought of that bait almost kind of the inspiration somewhat of like when you watch a fly. It's really subtle, right? And when they I don't know what your experience is, but a lot of eats I have on that bait, they're not, how do I put it? They're violent, but they're slow. Does that make sense? It's like they creep up on it. They go, bam. It's just like they kind of stalk up on it. It's not like this come unglued methodology or motif.
No, that fish I got yesterday. I mean, yeah, it was like, oh, yeah. Well, something's on, you know, yep. It was not, he just kind of caught up with it and put it inside his mouth for a little bit there. So, they're somewhat lethargic. Let's put it that way.
Well, and you know, it's
early.
Any other, I mean, again, and I you can get away with, well, hold on for one second. Hold on, folks. Sorry about that. That was the FedEx man. Anyway, I thought about it. We had to take a 5-second break there. We're already halfway there. We'll just freaking bang through some of this more early season stuff. Because it was crossing my mind. It's like, we're just talking about Titan Jr., right? The importance to get a lot of these eats in those moderate conditions, Jay, is the hang time, right? That, you know, the old adage about, you know, early season musky fishing or the spring where you take out your small bucktail or your giant killer, you throw it out, you turn the handle as fast as you can musky on in, right? That's on the best of days. We already kind of talked about on the worst of days that we're having to go down from downsizing, right?
Yeah, you're talking like a 1 to 10 scale of activity, right? Level.
So we're at a 10, right? This dreaded spring cold front, we're at a -5. But the in between, which is like when things are decent, right? It's not awesome, but it's decent. That's where a lot of guys, I think, fail because they want it to be awesome, which is the true assessment of what it is, where that's where like Titan Jr. comes from. But the thing is this, I think about like, okay, the pull pause of the Titan Jr. is pull, let it hang, right? I'm not overworking it. I don't think, Jay, you probably, when you're fishing, you're not overworking the crap out of it.
No, anyways. Not at all.
Right.
No.
For me, I actually, the fish I got on this week, I was working it with the rod lifts vertically, right? Pull it up. I know, like, if you haven't worked it that way, Titans will work with lift. They'll dive down as you lift the rod up, but it streaks them ahead a little bit more, right? So I'm doing that to work around timber and shallow stuff. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Pretty dang subtle, right? But the most important aspect of that entire retrieve is the hang, right? And positioning that hang or strategically picking when you're going to add hang time in. The same thing with minnow style baits, right? Because I do exceptionally well with pool pawls on minnow style baits during the same period or on moderate days, right? Before I was rudely interrupted with a package at the door, I was saying about flies, which is the same thing, which is this pull stop activity, which, you know, if you look at it, that spring complement for that, which is my powerhouse, which is Titan Junior, and now you take Banshee, which is with the weight ends pull hang, or with the weight out is pull rise, right? So that's something that devastating is taking the weight out. A lot of guys haven't done that yet, Jay, by the way. I actually talked to you this week, and I said take the weight out and play with it too, because a couple guys I've talked mm-hmm. to are very much addicted to getting it to glide, right, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But the other trick is it's 2-in-1, where if you remove the rear weight, it has a pretty quick float up, but it's not as quick, which is my other favorite this time of year, which is the Slammer Fatty Minnow, right? It's slower than that. So this like a fast rise or a slow rise or your dive and rise of the Titan Junior, which is that kind of that little group. And working through a group of baits like that, so you've got your number like 10 on the spectrum, like you were saying, Jay, your quick moving stuff, and then we have our busky stuff for the ultimate suckitude. But having some good hanging baits in there for moderate conditions, I think that gets grossly overlooked, right? Where Titan Junior, Slammer Fatty, obviously Banshee is built to kind of fill that in. I mean, conversely, I mean, one could, you know, the old thing of taking like a shallow raider and putting lead tape on it. And I'm trying to think of other baits that kind of crane. I mean, you could do like a crane, and you could do the 7-inch Suic, and you could do, I'm trying to think of Ernie, you know, and suspend Ernie. So you don't have to, I'm not trying to be like shilling my baits. Don't get me wrong, right? But to solve those problems, to solve that dynamic of they're really hot and they're going to go on blades, they're really crappy and we got to throw basically bass stuff with stronger hooks, or we have that moderate, and that moderate bite gets over as, I think, is over as look, Jay, where we started the show. We're talking
excellent
about
time of the year.
Yeah.
Excellent time of the year to just get something that's got a slower rise to it. Not uh-huh. the really, you know, like, okay, great example, crane bait, they're balsa wood, right, they rise really fast, yep. You know, okay, modified crane, you know, with heavier yep. hooks or whatever. Like you said, I have not used a Banshee yet with the weight out. I mean, Tom and I filmed it today, so I got a lure demo of it. You know, it was with the weight in, just showing right. the suspending qualities and doing some little twitches and gets right. a little side to side going. Not yeah. as good as yours, but it's looking great.
Did you do it with real turns?
Tom was retrieving. I got the thing under the
you
water.
You got to do it with real turns. yep. Well, I'm not trying to push that, but to be honest with you, this is when I've designed baits of like, I'm so tired of modding stuff. I'm pretty good at modding baits, but if I have the ability to create them mass produced, how about make them where they're already good to go? On that crankbait front. And I warn everybody, Jay, I think Banshees are good. We got, again, not trying to push you on them, but we got a handful more we actually have killed twice now. We've killed orders to Europe to get musky shot more Banshees. So, you know what? We won a world war, so we didn't have to give them our Banshees, Jay.
That's one way to look at it.
It was part of the deal. So there's like just another tiny handful you'll get that Jay and I talked about today. But, with that bait of having that moderate rise, because I love like that quick rise of say like the slammers or the crane, but that in between rise. And it's the same thing, like I said, with the Titan. But the one thing you'll notice on the Banshee though, and I was telling you, I don't know if you'll see it on your footage, when you pause it, you'll see that its head rotates up before it floats up when you take the weight out. So it actually will rip down, and then it finds its equilibrium and then comes at a different angle than you think it will, which is kind of fun. But most people aren't going to use it that way. But that's what it's there for, take the weight out and rip it. But, you know, that in-between bite, and I think really you know, if you can make the assessment of where you're at, we talked about in the weather pattern of things, where are we at? Let's make a realistic assessment. Let's not waste half the day throwing blades or burning spinner baits, right? Let's not waste the half the day on that. You can kind of flavor, you know, season to taste on any given day, kind of in that spectrum of the worst of the worst, like we were talking about with the bad cold front stuff, of being prepared for that. But also, too, I guess, heck, right there with that suspension or the slow rise, I mean, you pretty much got them covered. I'm trying to think of anything else since we just kind of got prattling along on this.
No, by all means. I mean, your weather forecast, what did Google AI say? You got 2 days till a cold front hits, you know?
You know what? We back in the day, we used to say cold front Steve Awesome. Remember that? When things suck, you know what you do, Jay? You embrace them. You embrace the suck, right? And I've learned to embrace cold fronts because I can get real mad on the boat every day about it and kick rocks and pout or just go. I for a couple decades now, I've just told myself I've gaslit myself to say I love cold fronts enough that I look forward to them. Right.
Well, there's times and situations where you can locate them easier. Maybe not easier is the wrong way to say it, but
no, you're spot on, which is we know where they're at. You just don't want to fish there. And that's what I've say to clients.
Yeah.
Which is a tough thing. If, you know, I'm sorry, this is not the throwing double tens podcast or how quick we can rip rubber podcast, right? This is the nerd suckitude. Welcome to reality. But, and it almost goes back again, the mental stuff I'm talking about in the book, which is like, the self-discipline to do it, right? You know they're there. You know you're in a cold front. You know they've gone to bottom. You know they're not hitting big stuff, but you would rather spend 8 hours of your day looking for an outlier because you have faith. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what most guys do, which is like so counterintuitive to me. I mean, just the way I'm wired to go, Why are you going to do that when the logical answer is they've reverted to depth, they're going to only react to really small stuff, and it's going to have to be close proximity, slow speed.
But the logical answer is also the odds. Why don't you want to play the odds every now and then?
Right.
You know what I mean? Whether it's the opposite, whether you know, warm front just went through and things have changed, where it's just like you might have a day or two where there is pretty hot activity, you know, and then you go from there with a different
strap up with that bucktail and let it rip.
Sure,
I mean that's the thing, which is, you know, when we started, and I'm just trying to pound home of admitting where you're at in the weather phase or admitting what's logically most likely to be taking place, you know, it all comes back. It's all the same thing. Every little facet of this is to lead to the same answer of where they're at and what will they hit. But you don't have to sift through the entire tackle box. And I think a lot of it too, I think about early season for guys that haven't been out yet, which is like, you know, they're going to be eager to try everything they bought over the winter when you go, okay, what's most realistic or what's the logical choice? You know, and there's schools of thought though too. You will see it, and I'll admit this, there are times, you know, in a cold front where speedier small cranks can do it though. You know what I'm saying? There's a time and a place for that, but it's generally, you know, in the summer where that takes place, but these early season cold fronts, I mean, guys are chomping at the bit to catch a muskie, but they're not chomping at the bit to do what it takes to catch one. They'd rather sit there and pound their head against the wall and just do the most illogical. But anyway, I better do some Q&A, Jay. We better get after it here. After that, just rambling, ramble fest. Cold. Now you know, folks. Now you know. That's how you deal with a spring cold front. Or keep throwing bucktails. Brandon, when should I use a jointed crankbait versus straight crankbait in the summer when fishing shallow weeds or rocks? Is there a difference? I like it. We talked about this. Question. If you don't know, refresh your course, right? Jointed crankbaits, the thought process behind this was to get more visual wobble wag to the bait at slower speeds.
Right? Perceived speed. Yeah.
Perceived speed. Where a straight crankbait is a quicker deal, right? Now, that's what the old heads will tell you, right? That's the OG answer. You know, there's something, too, about the float up of a jointed crankbait, of it does weird things, right? To twitch and get more look, more visual appeal to it than just a straight crankbait. So...
sonically too.
Yeah. They more clacking, more whacking. Yeah.
More clacking and whacking. Yep.
Which is the pro term, clacking and whacking.
It is.
But there's a whole section on the website for clackers and whackers. Just mm-hmm. It's just not on the Musky Shop website. But nonetheless, to me, I mean, given my druthers, I'm gonna prefer to fish jointed cranks. Right? If I'm targeting the same area, because I personally, if you know, take it down to binary, which is going to be a jointed depth rater versus straight depth rater. Everybody's seen them. Everybody's got one, right? Well, you're going to get a little bit more depth out of your jointed, or excuse me, out of your straight depth rater on a cast than your jointed because of resistance and surface area and yada, yada, yada. But I think jointed looks better when we're ripping and twitching, right? Because you're going to, if you rip that thing and it's going to kick off a little bit to the left, real quick, it's a more erratic bait. Not just in the sense of its tail is wagging while you're retrieving. It's more erratic in how it pauses, how it stalls, right? And how that bait is going to present visually. So for me, the pick is, are the fish really active? Are you targeting, say he went in around, you know, weeds, rock, things of this nature. Are we targeting negative and neutral fish? Are we targeting active fish? You know, do you know fish are there? And you know, the canned answer is usually going to be, well, try them both and figure it out. The fish will let you know. Will they? Probably not. If you notice, that's the canned answer in musky fishing. I'm probably guilty of it, too. The muskies will help. What I'm going to go with is...
not everyone has 200 hours to experiment.
Right, exactly.
The fish is going to tell you. Yeah.
And I'm trying to give this guy a straight answer, which is like, I'm not sitting there going, let me go around on this fish six times. For me, it's going to be reading the weather a little bit more, right? Is it we're just talking about spring cold fronts and all this. Are you in a cold front? Do you need to get down deeper? So to me, that conversation is where do I depth? I think I'm working through brain math here, but when do I actually make that decision? When's a real decision on the boat opposed to some, you know, canned answer? The real decision for me is going, okay, if it's cold front, I'm gonna go with the straight because of depth. Right, which is probably backwards of the intended purpose, which is you wanted the illusion of speed. So
yeah, it's a presentation you can slow down with the jointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the take there. Anyway, Jamie, planning my first trip to the Lake of the Woods this year. What are some lures that are absolute must-haves for Lake of the Woods? Well, can't debate the bucktails.
Especially if you're going later in July or August. Yeah, that can be king.
No, he was going pre-spawn pike fishing. What bulldog? I'm teasing. I mean, tried and true. What's the frenzy? The trigger? What do they have there? Jay, 7-9, 8-9. No, they got ringer now. They got trigger.
Stagger 8-9
is going to be one. Jake's. 8 and 10 inch Jakes are money. And don't forget, and then again, everybody loves tubes, but a lot of guys are using Kraken up there. Actually, a couple guys that are guides up there are doing, Darcy Cox and a few other people are doing really well on that bait. Hopefully I didn't give it, sorry for giving your secret away, but they're doing really well on that bait and perch, right? Hookup ratio is better. And then Lake of the Woods is a shallow fishery, so adjusting the weights quickly throughout the course of the day, where if you want to hit mid, deep, and shallow with the same bait. Mm-hmm. And so you're just making adjustments on the fly, take the weight in, put it in, bam, 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 5 seconds. And, you know, that is a really good counter to the typical blade bite. You know, guys are just burning blades up there, so those fish see a lot of blades. You know, and with Canada now, there's less and less secrets than ever. You know, so you got to look at it from a pressure standpoint. You're not going to go wrong with a stagger blade. You're not going to go wrong with a Jake. Get a Fire Tiger Jake. Get a Perch Kraken. I don't think
you recognize the pattern you're in, though.
Yeah, recognize the pattern you're in. You're not going to go wrong. I mean, top raiders have caught a blue billion muskies on Lake of the Woods.
Great topwater fishery at times. Yeah. Yeah.
Fat Bastard have it on hand. I mean, those are the ones. I'm not a Lake of the Woods guy like tried and true. I fished it. But those, like, if I was going, like, okay, I know those are ones I am taking for sure, right?
Sure.
Obviously have some rubber on hand. The biggest thing with summer fishing is I know that the vast majority of those fish are seeing blades. And the later in the year, and it depends on when I'm going too, the later in the season, the less blade centric you should probably be, right? And you got to, heck, if we're talking about assessing things, do you know a lot of the lake or you just know a section? How much pressure is in the section that you're fishing, right? Because you go, if you're the, you know, you're coming up the third week of August, last week of August, and those fish have seen blades heavily since the beginning of season. If you're relegated to only knowing an area around camp or only traveling X, Y, and Z, you're going to have to think about pressure in and around where you're fishing on top of just overall pressure and then standing out from that, you know, in that sense. So I would have some different approaches. I mean, things that are working in Canada that a lot of guys don't talk about is having somebody vertically jigging too, Jay.
Vertically jigging?
Yeah. Even in shallow stuff. That's something that nobody does because I want to cast. I'm telling you right now, having somebody just bounce a freaking Bondi in 10 feet of water, you'll catch fish. You're throwing at the weed edge and have somebody bouncing, whether it is a fish that followed or is a fish that's, you will catch fish, or bounce a Kraken off the bottom. That's something that people do not do enough of. Ethan! I'm heading to Rhinelander. That's all it says. I'm teasing. Ethan says, I'm headed to Rhinelander on May 8th for a family trip and going to bring the boat. Do you recommend any lakes around the area? Looking for numbers, not size. Jay? Numbers?
Yeah, Boom Lake. Yeah, the river system with Boom Lake.
Yeah.
There you go.
Boom. Be careful.
Don't get, yeah.
They named it Boom because of the stumps. Named Boom for a reason. I have boomed on Boom Lake myself, by the way.
Boom, got another one. Boom. That's what's going to happen when you go out there.
It's not boom, you got a muskie. It's boom, you found another stump.
Well, you got to be careful. That's why they call it Boom Lake, too.
Yeah, I don't know if they named it that, but boom, there goes your lower unit. Oh, man. You know, if you're in, how far from, you know, you got, I mean, get in the river channel up there. Just be careful. Stay in the channel. Fish off the channel. And again, fish around the stumps and all the shallow stuff. Brent. I'm looking to start making my own musky lures. What tips would Steve have for someone looking to get started? Well, don't waste your time. I'm teasing. Yeah,
bucktails are one thing, but if it's bucktails. A non-bucktail, that's well, a whole different ballgame.
Well, he says lures. Bucktails, right. Here's the deal with bucktails. You should be making your own bucktails. If you're a musky guy, make your own bucktails. right? I've seen every iteration of interchangeable. You got interchangeable clevises. We have quick change clevises. We have this thing and that thing and that thing, right? Getting past the point of just grabbing a bucktail and cutting it in half and rebuilding it, right? I've had guys on the boat where they go, man, that's kind of hillbilly or bush fixy or whatever. The muskies do not care, right? It doesn't have to be pretty to catch muskies. It just needs to be built properly. We've done videos on the Muskie Shop TV, on the Tube of You, on I think I actually make one, Jay, on a video just using vice grips, right? So you don't need fancy stuff to make them. Again, it's liberating to make your own blades. No one has magical bucktail components. Nobody. They buy their blades from most of the same sources. They buy beads from the same sources. They buy sinkers. It is a egg sinker. It is flashaboo. It is beads. The sum of all parts, right? And nobody produces all the parts. Maybe MEPS does. I think maybe MEPS produces specified parts for theirs. But still, it can be replicated. It can be duplicated.
So, yeah, relatively inexpensively, and that too. It's gratifying when you catch a fish on a bucktail you made. I mean, that's awesome.
Right. And it also allows you to allocate spending to buying hard baits you can't make or rubber baits you can't pour.
Yeah, I suppose.
So, it's as easy as, I mean, 5 minutes. And if you have the parts and pieces there, I carry a box on my boat when I'm fishing blades and when it's that time of year. That is wire shafts, beads, it's all the components in one plano box, bunch of extra skirts. Once you get to that point, it's a far better animal. So I don't know, I doubt this guy's talking about that, but that plays to everybody. It's just get over the bucktail thing. Oh, you want blades on the back? Add a blade to the back. Right? It's wire and hooks. That's the thing, right? Tying the skirts. People make beautiful skirts. There's definitely some cool things that people do there. But foundationally, that's pretty easy. When it comes to making lures, what I'll tell you is this. This has nothing to do with creating the lure, the process of crafting it. Don't make a lure and then try to find the solution or the application. Right. Don't create don't come up with a solution and then try to find the problem. The way you make a great lure is identify a problem and then create the solution. The way you make a cruddy lure is make something and try to find where it applies. That's just foundational. Right. So when I'm quote unquote making a lure, or coming up with a lure, I am trying to identify something I need. We were talking about Banshee earlier. Okay, I need pick on that because everybody seems to love it. But basically, that is a pre-modified crankbait, right? It'll glide. It'll do all this different stuff. And then I needed that out of the package that was right, consistent, and walked the dog side to side and did all this stuff, right? I didn't think of the Banshee. I thought of the problem, right? And the Banshee was the solution. I needed a downsized spring musky jig or something that could be used as a cast back for super reluctant fish, early season bait, a la critter, right? I needed that. I didn't go, ooh, let me make this bait and then come up with how to use it. That's how you make baits. Yeah, that's the number one thing, because I see a lot of, you know, I look around, you'll see this, you'll see that. Here's, you know, yet again, a clone of Duff's baits, right?
Supernatural.
So, yeah, somebody else is making a bait. All right, it's got a big metal lip, and it's got adjustable pins, and it's got that. What'd you make?
Self-correcting line tie.
Right, what did you make? You made a clone of Duff's bait, which you might have made it bigger. You might have made it smaller, right? but it didn't. It okay. The you know, it's got to be, and it's not the baits have to be different. There's only so many fish shapes, but I say that because I've seen multiple iterations where you go, okay, that's not different. And it's not about different as much as it doesn't solve a problem. And if it doesn't solve a problem, it's not something I'm going to be interested in. So if you want to make baits and you're actually trying to do it from a standpoint of you want people to buy said baits, you have to identify the problem or identify the situation, create the solution for the situation, and then you have a bait. You know,
so yeah, what do you need?
What do you need?
I need this. I'm lacking this. You know, right. It's like, this one's now, close, but I got to modify it to do this. And right. I can't, you know, then I have to have two of them.
Well, and I mean,
one modified and one stock, you know.
Duff wanted a bait that literally he took his dog on a walk and it was going side to side. And he said, that'd be cool. He identified a goal, a target. You know, if you're an aspiring bait maker and you renew the podcast with Titan, you know, freaking kill me if I had to watch one more person struggle with a Suic. Can't get it right. It's not doing this. It's not doing that. You know, okay, it's not running great on my new 9'6" rod or not with high speed. So there was an issue. So identify the problem, then come up with a solution. That's with any product. And I'll tell you that, like when I go to like these big trade shows or whatnot, you'll see this crap where it's like, I call them boardroom baits, Jay. Bunch of dudes in a boardroom came up with that one, guaranteed. You know, you just see it and you go, It's just a thought where you just look at a bait. I'm not saying in the musky world, more so you see in bass where it's okay, that's a boardroom bait because it's just this, that, and the other. You know, it doesn't
looks like this, yeah, and it looks like that, and it looks like that
does
one
this
too.
And does that, blah 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 blah.
Let's get a fancy name for it and a big marketing push.
Ronnie's killer. All right, let's do one more here before I starve to death. Jacob, long story short, but here it goes. I go to Canada every year with my friends. Three of us are in one boat. We usually boat 1 to 2 muskies in the entire boat for the trip. My friends feel like this is a successful trip. When we compare it to people in camp, they're doing about the same. When I listen to the podcast or I see guides posting, it doesn't seem like we're doing very good. What is your standard for fishing Canada? Interesting. Standard. Well, there is the core. There is no standard. Did you have a good time? There's the standard. Did you enjoy the experience?
And did you have enough time too? Because if you have 6 days, chances are you're going to get a good weather stretch. You know,
right?
If you have a 3-day trip, you're at the mercy of something really harsh happening climactically. Yeah,
but. Good weather, bad weather. Nobody's keeping score.
No.
Some people are keeping score. I don't know what for. For the trophy championships brought to you by. No one cares. So, if you feel like you want to catch more fish, then there's ways to do so. There, you can definitely have bigger and better weeks. I have had weeks where a lot of muskies were caught in my boat that were absolutely miserable. Okay. So the fish will not fix that. I've had, you know, trips where no fish were caught and it was a really great week. Okay. I've had trips where I've learned a lot and I've had trips where I caught a lot. So there's no, don't compare. And it goes back to the stuff where it's like, you know, whatever. But, you know, comparison is theft of joy. So who cares what everybody else is doing? This is a personal pursuit. There's no teams and no one's keeping score. No one cares, right? Oh, you got Lunker of the Month. Who cares? Take
of course,
that.
If someone's really tearing them up, though, it would be nice to get that information on what kind of patterning they're using. But I understand what you're saying.
But does it really, you know, one of my favorite things is Al Frost said at one time, I asked him if you want me to take, I asked him, I said, do you want me to take your picture? You just caught one. He said, no, He's because no one would really care other than my mother. Right? Which is just how I feel about it. No one cares. You know, here I've put out my second book. Look what I did. Look what Steve did, everybody. Who cares? Doesn't matter. So, you know, and I'm not, this guy's asking a question, so we'll get to it. But the core of the matter is there is no standard. Did you enjoy your trip? Right? If you want to, if you have to catch muskies to enjoy the trip, that might be another situation too. Because I've been with people, they got to catch muskies. If I'm not catching muskies, I'm going to be in a real bad mood. Okay, this is not fun. Right? That's not fun. But
putting that kind of pressure on yourself, right?
Yeah, who cares? And it's musky fishing. What did you expect was going to happen? It's going to be difficult, but everybody wants to catch more fish. I'm getting there. But make sure that you're looking at it through the lens of there's no big scoreboard. No one really gives a rat's ass. When you catch a fish and you share it with others, all they want to do is look at it and go, where was he? When you get it on him, where were you? Yeah, no one cares. That, right? Yeah, that's most everything, you know, is that. But what I would look at, if everybody in the camp's doing similar, there's always a way to produce more, right? There's always something you can fix. So if you guys, would I say that's standard? That's probably on par. There's guys that do better and there's guys that do worse. They get a few fish, 2, 3, 4, whatever. There's guys that get 10. Everybody has their own thing. There's always room to improve, right? So don't look at it as a standard. Go, I want to improve what we're doing because catching more fish would make me happier and make it more fun for us, right? So looking at the camp, looking at the body of water you're on, is it high density? Is it low density? You know, if you're on Lake of the Woods, yeah, you can catch more than two or three. Oh, yeah. Right, you're on Georgian Bay, whole different, you know, different animal. So consider where you're fishing. And he didn't say where he is, but consider where you're fishing. And then, you know, again, first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to look at what am I throwing, what am I not throwing. Right. Well, we're really think about this, and this is the kiss of death for a lot of people. This is the bait that really produces up here, Jay. This is the one, right? And they go year after year on their trip throwing whatever. Ronnie's stump knocker, right? Ronnie's stump knocker's the one because we caught old Big Lenny on it. 43 inches of glory, right?
Right. Thinking like that is just right. Goes against everything we talked about earlier today. So.
Well, with everything. Exactly. Which is, I mean, like, you know, they obviously dude's writing in because he wants to catch more fish, period. But you're catching 2 fish, 3 fish, and you're stuck in this loop of throwing Ronnie's stump knocker or whatever it is, because that's what produces. Well, you gotta sacrifice throwing that. You can't be tied to anything. Again, some of the mental stuff, book stuff here, but you can't get caught in that loop of this is what works. You got to kind of fresh start it sometimes, and you got to get away from what has worked to find what really works. Right? Step back and go, okay. If you look at history of what you've been doing, you've obviously got some of these trips in your belt, and go, okay, stepping away from this, this is what we've done. Don't look at just the bad weather days or something like that. Just look at it and go, okay, we're catching 2 or 3 fish, but we only do this. There's usually something where it comes together where if you analytically or analyze what you typically do as a musky angler, you'll find that there's some glaring, like, oh, I do that nonstop. We're always doing this, or you're always just, let's go over here. Why? Because I got a gut feeling. Because, you know, Jay, what's the line you say? Look over there.
That looks like a good spot over there. Right. Don't let luck or feeling determine your fishing success yet.
Right.
Classic.
Al Lindner. Oh, over there. So.
Classic truism. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like everybody does it. Everyone's done it.
Right. Are you, you know, what kind of trap are you stuck in?
Mm-hmm.
Is it you're throwing the same crap? You're fishing the same spots? You're fishing the same spots and throwing the same crap? You're not checking new? What is it? There's something, you know. Again, I'm not trying to shill books either, but that's a lot of the stuff I'm you know, from doing the podcast for so long, you try to cut to the absolute bone on stuff, which is the new book, which is just let's cut the crap and catch muskies. Taking it down to that level and looking at what are you doing? Generally not the fish. What are you doing? What's kind of the trap you guys are stuck in? You know, and there's so many ways to increase it, whether it be boat control, whether it be lure selection, whether it be understanding structure. But yes, there's always room to grow. Sorry, I went rabbit hole on it there, Jay. You know, it's just that thought, but it's like the standard. I pick on questions on occasion because there's nothing wrong with asking that. I just think from the standpoint of you better be having fun. And when it's not fun, stop doing it. You know, you've ran into it in this game, in musky fishing. It's all so serious. It's the end of the world. It is the end all be all. It is all things. Right.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yes. You know, with a lot of people's thought process. Yeah.
The only way. It's the only way I can derive satisfaction.
It really should be fun, though. I mean, bottom line, it's just like we're letting them go. It's just, you know, the thrill of the pursuit and figuring out what to do and hopefully catching one and connecting.
We're all looking for connections with fish. Anyway, prattling on about. Sorry, folks. Anyway, Jaybird, say good night.
Okay, thanks. Night.
I wonder why they cannot see inside my weeds. I wait to feed. Not fill the